Back to Lather Talk. I'm your host John, aka Lather Hog, and with me is my co-host Gerard, aka Hey Gerard Shades.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
And our guest for today is Shane, the man behind Blackland Razors. Thank you so much for joining us today, Shane. How are you doing?
Hey John, hey Gerard. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're so glad that you could join us. I think you are technically our first razor maker on the podcast, so. You get that kind of distinguished honor. Gerard, yeah, I saw awesome. You thinking, am I right?
I think so.
I've listened to enough. I think that's true. That feels right to me.
Are we in a bad state?
If not, we just pissed off somebody.
We're not throwing shade to anyone. This could just be fatigue brain or something. But anyway, Shane, we're so glad that you could join us today. And we're just hoping to get to know a little bit more about the man behind this awesome razor company. So could you tell a little bit about yourself, stuff like, where you're located, maybe some hobbies, interests, kind of whatever you'd like to share.
Sure. I mean, I'll give you the quick bio. Let's see. I'm 31. I live now in San Diego. We just moved from San Francisco. We've actually moved kind of all over in the last few years, but we're in San Diego now. Married, my wife and I, we've been together forever, moving around the country. In my spare time, I mean, in COVID times, I don't do anything. I think like most of us, but I used to to go outside, and I still run a bit and stuff like that. But I used to like going to the gym. I've done all sorts of hobbies and stuff over the years. At the very beginning of COVID, I was getting into jiu-jitsu for the first time, and that got taken away from me real quick. So that was a fun, 3 weeks. Oh. I'm most into guitar and coffee, podcasts, and like beer and whiskey would be like my jam. That's probably, if you could like condense me into things I'm into outside of shaving, I guess that's it. But I'm also into like books and reading and history and all sorts of weird stuff. Like that's kind of, I'm interested in learning things, I guess, if you had to boil me down.
A modern Renaissance man.
Not at all, but I like to know a lot of things. A wannabe, a modern wannabe. Sure. That works for me. Yeah. I'm just curious, that's ultimately my thing. I like to, like when I was in college at one point, I made my own shoes for a little bit. Like terrible shoes, but I just made them because I like just to make stuff, and I don't really care about shoes, but I just like get interested in things and I like to try new things, and it's kind of what happened with razors too. I just like learning things and trying things, and now here
we are. When this drops, you're going to start getting requests for Blackland sneakers,
Oh my god, no! I will never show anyone the shoes that I made. Like calling them shoes is. Really generous, but they were technically things I put on my feet for a bit. You will never see them. No one ever will. They're burned, gone.
What was your background, kind of area of study that you're making your own sneakers? And obviously, I'll be asking how you got into razor making.
Yeah, so I studied physics, and I realized what I like about physics is that it's everything, right? Like studying physics kind of gives you insight into everything in your world around you. And that really kind of, coincides with my curiosity of things. Like physics is the underpinning of all things, and you can kind of boil it down to that. So I'm interested in that. But what I realized is that I'm interested on it in the way I'm interested in a lot of things, which is like the surface level. I don't want to be the guy to do physics. I realized I'm interested in it. I like to kind of know it a little bit, but I want to know the surface level. Like I want to go listen to somebody else who knows what they're doing teach me what they know, and I don't want to do physics. And I realized like during college that I wanted to start my own business. I was interested in design, and I got into like designing different products and different things, and that kind of eventually became this, which I guess we can roll right into like how I started making razors, which I feel is probably gonna be your next question.
Yes, follow-up question. How did you get into razor making?
Yeah, so I've told this story a few times before. I guess you got to go back a little bit before I started making razors and go to when I first got one. So my wife, well, now wife, then girlfriend, got me a safety razor. I've gotten to this, like, I think like a lot of people do or did when I was like 20, got into a little bit of a hipster phase. And so I got into like old things and, you know, and part of that was wet shaving, kind of doing that like old is new trend. So I got into that and I got a little shaving kit. I got a Mercure 33C she gave me for my birthday 1 year. I think it's 33. 33 is the one that's like a traditional three piece, right? And 34 has like the bottom dial comes out.
Correct.
I think that's right.
33 is
it's the same head.
Is the smaller, yeah, smaller handle right. Three piece.
Yep. Yeah, so that's the one that I had. And just like a basic little, I don't know, brush and that little thing. But that just kind of existed. Like I didn't really, like I did it, I used it, I loved it, but I wasn't in the community. I didn't care. I wasn't like a wet shaver. I just did that. And then when a couple years later, I was thinking of, you know, products. And I had like this little notebook. I was constantly designing stuff and playing with things. And I can't draw at all. Like if anyone, every once in a while, you know, I sign like thank you cards for all my orders, but every once in a while I'll write something. If somebody, you know, something special is happening, if someone's like, hey, you know, I'm getting married, I want this razor. I'll be like, congratulations on the card. And anyone who's seen those cards knows how bad my handwriting is. And my drawing is like similarly bad. And so I was struggling with how to get these things out of my head and into the world. And at the time, I was really into cycling and triathlons, and so I was doing a lot of that and had this idea for a bike part that I thought was actually a pretty good idea. And so I realized, like, okay, I want to get this into somewhere, like out of my head somehow. And I was trying to, like, show people these little drawings, and no one would know what the hell I was talking about. They would just look at me like, I don't get it. So I taught myself CAD, and that took a while. And for people who don't know what CAD is, it's just basically like 3D render, like modeling program. So you design stuff in three dimensions and, well, two and three dimensions. And, so I started just practicing and I was just doing stuff around the house. Like I would just design cups and design just things, just copy stuff that I have. I go measure them and just make it in CAD. And I did that with the razor one day. So I started with a 33C and I just like took some basic measurements and, I was mainly looking for like what are kind of general dimensions of a razor, and I think a 33C is a good place to start for that. And so I took a couple, you know, a few measurements and started playing with it. And then I had it 3D printed after I got, you know, something that looked like a razor, and it was actually became the Blackbird. Like it started looking like the Blackbird really quickly. You know, we kind of started with the basic, and when I say like measuring the 33C, like it was like just some, you know, terrible calipers that I had. And so I got, you know, kind of close, and then I started playing with it over time, doing different iterations, different models. And I just kept 3D printing it and I would shave with each one. And at some point I realized like, it'd be kind of cool to make this out of something, you know, like real metal. And I was thinking like, man, it'd be cool if this was like real heavy, you know, well-made thing. And then I found that there's people who already like those and people who make those. Like I had no idea that that world existed at all. So I found that world and put myself in it, put my designs out there, created the company and started like just showing people what I was making before I even had anything. I just started showing the 3D prototypes and 3D printed prototypes and some renderings I had, and people were interested. And back then, you know, this is 2015. You could get away with that. Like there was few enough people, few enough razor makers that you could do that. There was like Above the Tie and Icon and Tradary had kind of like come and gone. But beyond that, there was very few people. Probably missing another player or two, but there wasn't many out there. So you could do that. You could like get a little following with just like some, you know, 3D printed models. And then I made a Kickstarter campaign once I had a little following and I failed. And then I made another Kickstarter campaign and I succeeded. And here we are, 5 years later now. And yep, that's basically it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very nice. I guess maybe a follow-up question to that was, like, in the past 5 years, has the growth been you know, like slowly, or like, you know, did it, like you said, the, you know, second Kickstarter campaign was a big success. You know, did you feel pressured to kind of, where they say, you know, like put your money where your mouth is, so that, you know, you can keep, you know, satisfied customers and a satisfied, you know, base of people, you know, to continue buying your products?
Yeah. So the first couple years were tough, because, you know, I started this company with like $4,500 or something like that, or $5,000, I think. I think I spent $4,500 on prototypes. And then I spent like $500 just other stuff, like getting LLC, getting a, like a website. So it was like very bare bones. We made our Kickstarter video with like zero money. I borrowed a camera from, like my college's lab or whatever. They like rent them out. And so that first year, the issue with, when you are new to manufacturing things, and especially when you don't really have a company, you just started it, they're not going to give you great credit terms, and you also don't know what you need. And so it makes production very difficult, right? So you have enough money to maybe order a couple hundred razors, but then you order them and you buy them, and you're going to pay more for them because you're getting relatively small production batch. So your margins are worse. And back then I kept my prices a bit lower because I was trying to like prove myself. And so, you know, the margin's really tight, and secondly, you know, underpriced. And so what happens then is like you have to wait until you sell all of those before you can buy more, because you have to buy them as soon as you order them. And so, you know, scaling up that way is really difficult because there's lead times involved. And so I would order, you know, whatever, a couple hundred razors, and then they would sell out eventually, or after a few weeks, or whatever. And then I would basically sit there like twiddling my thumbs until I got another batch of like, you know, 300 this time, or 250 or whatever. And it would be, you know, maybe 2 months in between. And I would just sit there and kind of like wait around and do other stuff. And like, and so it took a really long time to snowball that and to grow that organically. And a lot of that also, you know, I probably could have sped that up. I probably should have, you know, found a way to fund it better if I wanted it to be a real company. But, you know, I didn't. And so it took a few years to really get to the point where I could keep inventory, where I had the capital, where I had credit terms, where I had a manufacturer who was willing to, you know, make things in large numbers for me. And we just continued snowballing and scaling up over time, until really the last couple years, I would say, is when it really became substantial, real. And that largely is due to me taking it more seriously, right? And really jumping into it and really focusing on it and really trying to grow it. And that's really come to fruition this last year. But to answer your question succinctly, it's like slow, slow, slow. And then like we're going up now.
Shane, I was wondering if the razor making, is that your full-time job? Is it part-time, side gig?
Nope, I'm in. I'm 100% in. It's my full-time job. It's now a good full-time job. It's been my full-time job for a bit, and it's been a good one for, you know, a couple of years. And it helped that, you know, I started it with, you know, low cost of living. When I started, I lived originally Indiana, then Ohio, just out of college. We're both broke. So it doesn't take much to keep you happy. I didn't have, you know, kids. I didn't have a mortgage. I didn't have anything to really lose. And so I could afford to, you know, not pay myself a lot. That wasn't a big deal. And, you know, and thankfully I'm able to, you know, have a good salary now and have a good job and have some stability and have enough in the company that we can still grow it and do interesting things. So it's in a good spot now, but yeah, full time.
We might have talked about this offline, but I think it's a good question to discuss on the podcast. But is it a one man show? You know, or are there people that you freelance or part time? What does Blackland as a company look like right now?
Yeah, so functionally speaking, it's me. Like when you email me, when you email Blackland, you get me. When you call Blackland, you get me. It is increasingly becoming, I'm increasingly relying more and more on freelancers to do more things. So that's what really become true the next few months, like rebranding, new, you know, I have a new photographer, make my social media is way better. Stuff like that. So reaching out to more companies and doing more work with other people and freelancers and contractors. And then looking to hire actual Blackland staff this year at some point, hopefully. Hopefully by summer. But yeah, for now, it's me. It's getting, for the longest time, it was fine. And it still is okay, but it's getting to be a bit much. And so, which is a good problem to have, and I'm grateful for that problem. But it's getting a little much. So I'm excited to get someone else to help. I'm looking forward to that day when that comes. Yeah.
It's a good problem to have.
So,
yep, right, totally.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I feel like business a lot when you're actively trying to grow, it's like lighting a bunch of fires and then running out and like putting them out, but like you cause the problem. And so like me trying hard to grow the company creates all these problems, and I just got to run around and try to like solve them. And I'm just got to like plug those holes. And so yeah, it's like self-imposed problems, but they're the ones I want to have. So I'm glad I'm having those problems. It's better than the other problem you could have. It's better than the alternative. But you do have to be careful, like businesses die from being too successful or growing too fast or not growing right or hiring incorrectly or things like that. There are all sorts of ways to screw up. Just because you're selling a bunch of things doesn't mean that you're safe. It actually puts you in a lot, more danger, a lot more overhead. There's a lot more risk. It's really easy to have a company if you have no overhead. And if you get zero sales today, it doesn't matter anyway, like because you have a job or whatever. Like that's really easy. It's hard when you got other families that rely on you, your own family's relying on you. And when you grow, you wind up like putting more and more on you. And then if that goes away, like you really put a lot on the table. So, yeah, it's a good problem to have, but it's a problem that I'm also like really cognizant of the importance of, and trying to make sure I step about it in the careful and in the right way. Because ultimately, if I don't, then customers lose out. We all fail. Like if I do badly, then customers don't get what they want, and I haven't helped anyone. So it's important that I take that growth like slowly and carefully and methodically, and that's what I'm trying to do. But I'm also stumbling through it, just trying to figure it out as I go, because I'm doing the best I can, but I've never done it before. So
this is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Ah. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
I definitely wanted to mention an Instagram live video that you did recently, which outlined mm-hmm. kind of some things to expect for 2021. Guys, if you haven't checked that out, make sure to go to Blackland, the Instagram page, because, Shane did a great job just live, live on camera. And
thanks.
I was really pleased to hear 2020 was kind of the biggest year yet. And just it's kind of paving the way for some of these changes that you've already just shared with us. But I'm wondering if we can kind of drill down a little bit. We have some curious listeners as well, because I took some questions leading to the show. A lot of requests or a lot of curious people about a Jet Blackbird. Also, a lot of people were curious about an adjustable razor.
Yeah, so the jet problem really is a polishing problem. And that is a problem that is like endemic to Blackland, and it has been for a long time. It's just like, it's been something that I haven't been able to shake. The good news is that I think it has been shook. But for the people who don't know, the Blackbird Jet is basically, it is a polished Blackbird. So we take it, polish it to a mirror finish, and then it gets PVD coated. And so when you do PVD coating, it matches the finish of the surface below it. So if you have like a matte finish, the PVD will. And again, PVD, physical vapor deposition, is just like a really strong coating, also called DLC, diamond light coating. It's just a type of that. It's this really robust coating. It's resistant to scratching. It's really, really strong. They use it to like extend the life of tooling and things like that, and to use in military hardware and stuff. But so what we do is we polish the blackbirds, and then the PVD coating, the jet coating, goes on top of it. So that means you have to have polished blackbirds. And the problem with that is I have not been able to source polished razors consistently in a while. So my polishing gets outsourced. I've been fortunate enough that my machining has been with the exact same machinist for the entire time. I've never made a blackbird from anyone else. The same family-run machine shop in Illinois we've been working with for 5 years plus. So I'm very fortunate in that, like, every razor is made the same way by the same people. But the polishing has not been that way. So I've gone through several different polishers over time, and it's tough because polishing comes down a lot to individual skill. So you go to a company and they might have one guy who's great at polishing, another guy who isn't as good, or he's good at certain parts and not others, or certain types of material and not others. So it's really hard. You got to find, like, the right place with the right attitude and the right guy and the right ability to, you know, to meet our quality standards and quantity. And that's difficult. These are tiny little difficult parts to polish. I've polished plenty on my own. That was also a period where I did all the polishing myself. And I realized that no one is served by me polishing razors. I'm pretty good at it. If I'm not great, it's better to get the pros in there. So, you know, that's been the real bottleneck in both the jet and polished razors broadly. Like, you'll notice on their website, I got all the machine razors in stock, no polished. And that's the reason for that. But I think we have a new partner now, getting them up to speed. It takes a while. You gotta show them what you want. You got to give them some samples to test on. They got to, you know, screw those up a little bit. And you tell them, like, hey, let's tweak this. Let's do this a little bit better. And these guys are excellent. Listen to advice. They are, you know, super. Some people get stuck in their ways in the manufacturing world. Mm-hmm. And these guys aren't doing that. So I'm hopeful that we finally have a partner here that can keep that up. And if we can stock the polish razors, then we will stock the jet. And the adjustable razor, you know, that's more of a, that's a design bottleneck as opposed to a manufacturing one. So that's on me. I've been working on a new mechanism, a kind of unique mechanism for the adjustment. Something that's still familiar, but it's just a new take on it and a little different packaging and a way that I think will be, it brings something new to the table. Because especially now going forward with how competitive the field is and just, you know, my interest in things, like, I don't want to just make a razor that someone else is making. Like, I think Rex basically nailed the Gibbs. Like, we don't have to do that again. We're good. Like, we can stop. I don't need to make another Gibbs. There's like five of them now. It's too much. We don't need that many. And so, you know, so if I can't bring something new to the table, something new to the conversation, and something like a new twist on something, or something that, like, benefits either the users or, you know, the community at large, I'm just not going to do it. Like, if I can't bring something new, I'm not going to do it. So I need to do a little tweaking, a little engineering on the adjustment mechanism. I'm close, though. I think like 90% there. I might get some help on that last 10% because I'm not sure that I'm the right guy to solve that problem, but that's okay. And then yeah, we'll get rolling with that. I'm not sure. Yeah, I have no timeline on that. I know immediately when people see this, I'm like, hey, when's that coming? You got a timeline on that? And I'll get like a million emails, and I won't stop getting emails until it finally comes out. But, you know, it'll come eventually.
It'll be ready when it's ready.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've gotten good at saying that, so no worries there.
I've been, in the off time, I've been playing Cyberpunk 2077. And for the
game, yeah, I heard that.
For the gamers out there, they understand that this was a product that the company said it will be ready when it was ready, when it's ready. Well, they released it and it wasn't ready. so
I've heard.
So for everyone, patience is a virtue. So and I think everyone will be happy, and, you know, no matter what. So
no, well, most people will be happy. There'll be some who won't be, no matter what. Also true, and whatever, it's fine. I don't really, you know, I don't care about pressure. Like, it doesn't matter. People, like, constantly hound me for things. Like, it'll come. no worries. Eventually, like I was working on a slant razor in like 2016, and I still get emails about people like, "Hey, when's that coming?" And I'm just like, I honestly, I don't know. It kind of failed. Like, maybe not. And at first, it was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, I'm still working on that. It'll come soon." And then it's like, you know, it's been kind of on the back burner, and now I'm kind of like, I don't know. Maybe it'll come. I just, you know, other things become more interesting to me, and other things become more important from a business standpoint, and I just, you know, move past them. But yeah, patience is a virtue. You got enough shaving stuff, guys, at home. Like, you can wait for another one. I know it. you've got enough stuff to keep you busy for the next few months. It'll be okay.
I kind of like how it seems like a lot of the way you operate is very... I'm not sure a better way to put it, but it's like the way an artist would function, in that you're not going to bring to market something that, yeah, like with the Gibbs, if there's five of them out there, what's the point of making the Blackland version? I mean, unless like you're utterly in love with that razor, right? To keep your engagement, is it something that has to, that project has to hold your attention? You have to stand behind it, you know, 100%. Like how would you describe kind of that sort of like inception to completion for each project?
Yeah, so I think it, you know, it's two-sided. On the one, and they both things kind of complement one another. On the one hand, yeah, it is, like, I'm definitely not an artist, by the way, like, definitely not. But the people who, you know, on the one hand, yeah, I do get bored of, you know, I don't want to just make something that everyone else is making and something that I've already made before and just rehashing the same old thing, which I think happens a lot. So it's really boring from... you know, my personal perspective. But beyond that, if it's boring to me, it's probably not going to sell well. If it's boring, it means that the needle isn't moving. We're not doing anything interesting. We're not bringing something new to the table. There's nothing new to talk about. We've made another double-edged razor that works the same as everyone else, and it's the same price as everyone else, and it does the same thing. Great. And there are a lot of cool razors that do that, and you know, I respect them, and I'll probably make more down the line that do that. But to serve, you know, customers better, you got to make something new. You got to bring something interesting. And that also happens to serve me well. So I think both those things kind of go together. Like, if I'm into something and if I think it's interesting, then it's going to be a good seller, good for business and good for the community, and vice versa. If something's cool, interesting, and new, it's going to be interesting to me, and then I'm going to want to do it. So, you know, I try to be very careful about the things that I make, especially now and especially going forward. Everything has to have has to meet a few criteria. First, it has to, you know, it's got to look good, right? It's got to be cool. It's got to be interesting. It's got to be unique. And it also has to fit into the Blackland business. So it has to fit alongside everything else. It has to bring something new to the table. It has to round out the catalog. Like, it serves a purpose in filling space. Like, we have, you know, a gem and an artist club and a double edge and the Tradary, and we have a cheaper double edge and the dart. So everything kind of fills like its own little space. And the idea is that, like, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to have razors that overlap a lot in terms of either price or what they do. And so that also drives my decisions to try to do things that are new and interesting. And then finally, it has to be good for business. It has to be profitable. It has to be something that people will be interested in, and that often means something new and something innovative. And innovation can come in many ways. It can come in terms of price point. It can come in terms of, you know, the way you manufacture things. It can come in terms of, you know, design or function. You know, there are a lot of ways to be innovative. You could have the same razor that, you know, is made five different ways, and that can be an innovation, or a small tweak you do can be an innovation. But just bringing something new to me is pretty vital, because otherwise there's anyone else can do it. And in business and kind of in life generally, the harder it is for you, then the less likely people will follow you. So the more, you know, difficult my path is, the more work it takes, the more, you know, headaches I have, it's going to be put me in kind of rarefied air, and that makes it easier to sell things. When you're the only one who is willing to put up with all the BS to get there, then that's great. Like, that's beneficial to me. So I think that's why I try to look for things that are unique and innovative, because it helps in all fronts. There's no downside to it. And I wish, you know, and I hope more people do that. And you kind of see that. Like, I'm not the only one who understands that. Obviously, plenty of others out there are doing similar things and trying to move and push Razor's design and just white shaving generally forward. You see that a lot in the soap world, where, you know, production cycles are quicker and they can make new products more quickly. And you see people pushing out new bases constantly, and it gets like, wow, like everyone's bringing something new to the table. And the same factors function here too, as they do in that world.
I think that was a good comparison, by the way, as far as like innovation in soap making. But personally, what are some shaving soaps or just products in general that you enjoy?
Yeah, you know, a lot of customers ask me this, and I'll give you the answer I give them. I'm not a big soap guy. Like, I like them. My thing is. And I know I'm in the wrong room, but they're all good. Like, they're all good, and I think they're better than I am a shaver. Like, I think most of my customers, you guys included, are way more skilled at using these products than I am. Like, I love using a good razor. But for me, I get really similar performance out of like any artisan soap. And so I've tried a bunch over the years. I'm lucky enough that people send me some, so I get them a lot, and some blow me away, and even the ones that don't, I still like, and they're fine. So some of the standouts to me, I think Grooming Department has some of the best bases out there that I've tried. I love A&E is good. I've been lately using a really underrated guy that I think we should put out is Paolo from Eleven, formerly Saponi de Paolo. Yeah. I've always loved his stuff. I think it's really cool. I liked it. I loved when he had, maybe you guys remember a few years back, when it was SCP, he had, there was this one scent. It was like really citrusy, and it was like a soft, it's like a crope. I love softer soap, so I really like that one. But right now I'm using from him, I'm almost at the bottom, which is new for me, but it's a soap called Apollo, and I really like that. It's a good performer. I've used soaps from Oleo, whatever, Phoenix, I love. They're all good, you know. Mm-hmm. So for me as a customer, though, I don't have a great nose, so I like identifiable scents that are simple. Like, I like to smell something and go like, oh, that's woodsy, you know, or that's citrusy. Sure. You guys get so deep into it, and I respect it, but you guys nerd out on scents the way I nerd out, like on razors and geometries and things like that. So I totally get it, but I'm not that guy. And so I like things that are really basic, like, oh, this is leathery or whatever. And so I probably have right now like 10 soaps. They're just there. One that I found the other day, refound, is an old classic, Spring Street from Los Angeles Shave Soap Company.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an old one. I've had that one for like 6 years. I pulled that out. That was great. I love that thing. I don't buy soap very often. I've got plenty, and I don't keep up with the newest releases. Like, I'm definitely not that guy. I'm definitely not like going to stand in line for soap or anything. I don't know. I mean, there's plenty I should try. I get the itch sometimes, but lately I just, you know, it's not my thing. In terms of, you know, razors, I've tried tons of them. I no longer try them, but like, you know, I love Timeless. My favorite razor of all time is the BBS One. Or favorite, you know, non razor that I don't make.
Right.
And so, you know, I've definitely tried. I tried way more razors than I have soaps. Okay. I guess is the short answer to that. That's more my wheelhouse, because I like the mechanical aspect of things. And I like the, you know, design part. So that's more where my interests lie. And I can see myself getting into soap later, but for now it's just not really my focus. Which is, I think, is exactly opposite of you guys, right? Like, you guys are primarily like into the software side of things, right?
So
that and brushes. I was going to ask because you do carry a brush now. Mm-hmm. Are you a big brush guy, or same thing? Like you found a handful that you like and you kind of stick to it.
Yeah, so I'm a synthetic guy, which makes it really easy because they're all pretty similar. You can get there's like a couple, little tweaks here and there, but I've tried Badgers and stuff over the years, but I only do synthetics now, and I keep it pretty simple there. And so lately, I basically only use mine. I think I have a Mr. Fine travel brush. There's like a little tiny one. I think I got rid of all my brushes, but I've never been that guy who has like 20 brushes. I know those guys, but I'm not one of them.
I don't know what you're talking about at all, Shane.
20 is the number where John starts. What are you talking about? Yeah.
Man, I got to tell you guys a quick story. So when I first started Blackland, again, like I was completely ignorant of this whole community. In fact, the only two razors I had used when I started Blackland was a 33C and the Blackbird. Like that was it. I hadn't used anything else. And And so I kind of understood that, there are customers that I had just launched the Kickstarter, the successful one. And at the same time, I had moved to Columbus from Indiana. And when I moved there, one of my new Kickstarter backers, I'll shout him out, his name's Craig. And he reached out to me. He's like, hey, I saw you moved to Columbus. I live in Columbus. Do you want to go hang out? And I was like, yeah, sure. Great. I'd love to meet for lunch. And he backed my campaign and nice guy. And so I meet him for lunch and we met in this little Mediterranean spot. And again, I didn't really know any wet shaving guys. I'm not in the community yet. I made a razor. People liked it, and I appreciate that, but I didn't really know. So I meet Craig, and we sit down, and we're having lunch. And he's like, oh, shoot, hang on. I forgot something in the car. He goes, I forgot to show you this. So he runs up to the car, comes back with his chest, like a trunk. Like it was like this big. Like it was like 18, it was like 18 inches by, 18. Like it was huge. This big wooden thing. It was clearly custom built. It was really cool. And he sets it on the table and he's like, these are my razors. Or actually, these are my stainless steel razors. And this is in 2015 where there weren't that many. He opens it up and there's probably 30 razors in this custom foam thing. So they're all stuck in there. So he had all the icons. He had the original, he had the BBS one before it had the logos on the bottom. He had the prototype one of that somehow. He had all the first Wolfmans. He had everything at the time you could get, all the Tredaries. And I was just oh my God, what am I getting into? Who are these people? And he was this is, I have another one of these at home, full of the same type of things. And I was wow. And I, Craig and I are now really good friends, outside of shaving. We've hung out, tons of times. And we're just buddies, and I've been to his house several times, and he showed me the full collection, but also his entire bathroom is just lined in brushes. They're just everywhere, across the whole counter. And he's and then I have some more in drawers. And I was wow, these are my customers. I get it now. So that was my first foray into the collector, really.
Wow.
And that sticks sticks with me.
Shout out to Craig. Craig, I don't know you.
Shout out to Craig.
Shout out to Craig. I'm not Craig level. I'm just letting you know right now. what's his handle?
I don't know if he's on Instagram, but he used to be it was Cham, CHAMM. Was his handle on Badger and Blade. He's not as active anymore, but he used to be 3 years back. Mm-hmm. But shout out to Craig for kind of getting me into it. And through Craig, I was able to try all those razors. So that's what you have to do. Anyone out there, if you want to get in the razors or whatever, soap, have a friend. Don't buy all my razors. Just get a friend who has them all. That's the smart way to do it.
That is the smart way to do it, because that's pretty much how I
definitely
do it.
Yeah.
Very wise advice from the razor maker right there, guys. Take it to heart. Yeah. That's quite the introduction to this crazy wet shaving enthusiast hobbyist world. So I'm glad you didn't like just like turn around and like, I'm out of here. What have I done? Cancel the Kickstarter.
No. I mean, the exact opposite, right? Yeah. Like, wow, these guys will buy everything. And what that made me realize is that there's something in particular about men where, like, for every single thing that there is a bunch of guys obsessed with it. Like, everything. Every product you can think of, there are, and it seems like be particularly men. Women like their things, but men just get into everything. If you like a pen, there's a guy who has 1,000 of them. If you like pencils, there's a guy who has every type. Like, whatever thing you can think of, hats. Like, it doesn't matter. There's a guy out there obsessed with them. And I think that's fun. You know, it's cool. And, you know, I certainly don't think it's weird. Like, everyone has their thing. To the outsider, shaving is a weird thing to be obsessed with. But so is everything if you break it down, right? Like, when you boil anything down.
Yeah, and any sort of hobby that you can possibly be into. I mean, I'm more inland, you know, than in Los Angeles, but about like 30, 40 minutes away. I don't even know if they're open right now pre-COVID, but there's a place, shout out to Frank and Sons. They basically do a lot of like hobbies, anything with a hobby. So like comic books, toys, action figures, sports cards, trading cards, Magic the Gathering, Disney stuff, like... And it's basically like a giant warehouse, maybe. I don't know if it's the size of a Costco, but it's like, it's pretty big. And you could just go in there wow. and just see trading going on. You can see just enthusiasts and whatever.
Oh, so it's like an open venue for people to like swap
and stuff. It's a hobbyist flea market for like that kind of stuff. Oh,
that's cool.
Yeah.
For nerds. Like us. For nerds.
Yes. They do not have any razors or anything like that. But yeah, and I would go there, like, this was probably like 15, 20 years ago. And it's just crazy. Yeah, like if there was something that you wanted, you could go get it. Or you could find it. You will find the person that says, I stood in line for 3 days for this special edition to come out. Only 44 were ever made on planet Earth, and I have 13 of them, and I will sell one to you, or whatever it may be. But it's that kind of just enthusiasm and
fandom,
you know, that kind of commitment, you know, that kind of makes hobbies great. And
yeah, and hobbies are great because it's just fun to be into things, you know. Like, it's so easy to be cynical and just be like, well, that's dumb. And sure, maybe it is, but it's just fun to like buy into things. And it's fun to be part of the group and get like wrapped up in things. Cause like, if you just like sit on the sidelines and like boil everything down to be like, well, I'm not going to wait in line for that dumb thing. And I don't want to be part of that. And I don't need 10 razors. Like, okay, great, Grinch. Like, you know, it's more fun if you get swept up in things. It's more fun to let yourself go with the flow and be part of a group. And it's just fun to just be into things. It makes life a bit more exciting. Because I definitely am more of a Grinch, and so it's nice to, like, I try to let myself be a bit more, like, into the fandom and try to get into more of these kinds of things and let myself, you know, get, like, geek out on things. And so, you know, I love that we're in this community where people do that. And shaving's a particularly good one, or a good community. It's pretty healthy. People are relatively nice. There's customers are great, by and large. And, you know, it's this robust little place where people have like secret Santas and people send each other stuff to help out all the time. And it's just like a nice little place to be. And being a part of that community is, I really think, probably why everyone cares about the hobby. Like, if you just had to sit there by yourself and not talk to anyone and have your 20 brushes, like, it's not that fun, right? Like, if no one knew about it and you're just sitting there quiet, not talking to friends and not engaging in it, then like, who cares? But to be part of the whole group is really what I think we all like about it, or what I like about it.
Shane, did you ever geek out, because you mentioned guitar too, and I've shared before about how like I went down the rabbit hole of like electric guitar pedals. Did you ever get like gear acquisition syndrome on the music side of things, or did you keep it pretty
so even-keeled? I'm a hack. You should know that first. Like, I am a hack. Guitar is my, what I love about guitar is, you know, I'm probably like, I mean, I'm not like the worst player in the world. I'm like an intermediate. But for me, you know, I have a couple of, well, a few acoustics. And I want to get into electrics. My thing with electrics is I like to jump around, just do like things. And so when the mood strikes me, I want to be able to pick it up and I want to play. Like, I don't want to pull everything out. I don't want to set everything up. I don't like thinking about it. I don't want to be like, okay, what pedals I'm going to use, how I'm going to set up my pedal board. What should I turn on? What should I turn off? Should I put my headphones on? Is it too loud for the neighbor? It's like, I just want to pick up my guitar, put it on my lap, and just like zone out and mess around. And because I'm not like, I don't take it super seriously. That's been the thing holding me off. And so my plan is, you know, when we stop moving around, which, you know, I don't know when that's going to end, when I have some sort of permanent base, then I'll do that. When I have like a room where I can set up, then I'm going to, you know, load it up with all that stuff. Cause I think that, I want to play electric really bad, and I've played, you know, plenty, but I want to own it and do it right. Every time I do one of these, and you will get this in your comment section somewhere, I'd be like, oh, that guy sells razors and he has a beard. I want you to all remember that Leo Fender, the guy who created the iconic Fender guitars, the most iconic guitars of all time, did not play guitar. So you don't have to be the world's best guitar player to make a guitar, and you don't have to be the world's best shaver to make a good razor. So I want you guys to remember that. But they won't remember, and we'll still get the emails anyway, and that's okay.
We did have a few listener questions.
Let's do it.
Some of the stuff we actually kind of went over.
We covered a lot of it. So, but the one I definitely wanted to run by you, Shane, comes from Nate from BBS Live. And he asks, with soap makers, we see new scents and soap bases all the time. As a razor maker, do you have that same push to come out with a new razor model?
So, I have the same push, if you mean like from customers and from fans. But, you know, we touched on this earlier, actually. Like, I think actually Gerard kind of brought it up. Like, I think we were talking about the artistry thing. You were saying like how much you listen to what people say to do and how much you kind of just do what you think is right. I've made mistakes in both directions. And, you know, what I realized though is that, you know, fans are always clamoring for a new thing. And what they really want is like a new flavor of the things they already like, or they like just a new version of something, because that's what they like. Like, that's kind of how it works. If you're a fan of the thing, like all you can want is more of that thing. And so, you know, I get a lot of that where people are like, make a titanium version of this and make a version of that and make every version of everything, like new scents, if you will, of razors, like make every version of everything. And it's really easy to fall into that trap of doing that. And I have, like, the Brass Blackbird doesn't sell that well. And I like leaned into, I was like, hey, the fans want it, I'll do it. The fans don't want it, right? Like, loud guys wanted it, but like, not enough to make the thing worth it, want it. And that's happened a few times. And so, but alternatively, people clamored for the titanium for years and I kind of ignored them. And then I made it and I love it. And it's like my favorite razor. And, it's done really well, so I should have done it 3 years ago. So it's about knowing when to listen to fans, when they're right, when they're wrong, and then going with what I think makes sense for the business. So there is that, you know, push from fans, and it's incumbent on me to know when to say yes and when to say no and when to just ignore them. And so, you know, that's a thing I'm constantly juggling, because you want to keep fans happy because they're the bread and butter, right? Like, those are guys who put me here. Those are guys who let me be this job. So I'm incredibly grateful to them, but I'm also trying to grow the business. I'm trying to create new things. And so, you know, I tell them no a lot. Like, you see that with the titanium Blackbird, you know, with the regular Blackbird, you can have a long handle and a short handle and an open comb and closed comb. And with a titanium Blackbird, you get a Blackbird. Like, that's it. You get safety bar, 85 millimeter handle, no other options. And the reason for that is my resources, my capital, my time is better spent on things that sell at volume. And so I have to know that, like, you know, there's a bunch of people out there on the forums saying, like, I want the long handle titanium, I want open comb titanium. And it's my job to go look at the numbers and go, guys, this is how many long handles you actually buy from the stainless version. this doesn't make me money. It doesn't make any sense for me to stock these all. I'm sorry. Like, I know there's like a few of you that are really loud about it. And I'm legitimately sorry. I wish I could make five for you guys, but ultimately it's my job to say, no, you know, I'm sorry. I know you guys really want it. The three of you who are really loud, but, I've got to know when it makes sense for the business. And so, you know, those things are sometimes in opposition. Like, what's right for the business isn't always what the fans want. So I hope that kind of answers it, I guess. It's just a juggling act. But yeah, mm-hmm. I'm always looking to the next thing.
So this is from DK Damn Fine Shaves. So what is this I hear about a modern injector style razor made by Blackland?
What DK Fine Shave, or whatever your name is. I know that guy. I forget exactly what his name looks like. You know, what you're hearing is me on forums going like, yeah, I have designs for that. So I have designs for a lot of things. And sometimes I overstate how, like, because I get excited about things. So I think that I maybe a time or two, like on DFS, maybe been a bit too strong about like how likely an injector is. The reality is like I have designs for them. And I think they're cool. But again, it's a matter of like priorities, what should come up next, what project am I working on now. So, you know, there isn't anything technically official about an injector. But when I do it, you can be damn sure that it's not going to be anything but an injector. Like, you can actually be able to inject a razor into it. I get that people make razors that are like three pieces and injectors, but the whole thing of the injector razor is the injecting. Like, it's such a cool little mechanism. You have to have your razor do that. You can't get an injector razor that doesn't have that. So if and when I make one, which is probably will happen, it will be in a true injector. You'll be able to inject the thing, because that's really important to me, because I think it's so cool and nifty, and I like it. I like the I like the doing of it, so I'm gonna do that. But probably 2022 or later, or to be like the slant, and we'll be talking about it in 2030. I don't know. Who knows?
All of the slant fans are just like, "That's it, I'm done." You know.
People reach quitting probably the podcast, like my dreams.
Yeah. I mean,
Black Bam has been, sure, been honey dicking like, me with this, with this with this slant for so long.
Oh yeah, they actually have been. I mean, that's definitely my fault. Actually released in like 2016 or something. I released like render. Well, not, they're like 3D models, I think, like screenshots of a of a version I'd made that was basically like a Blackbird slant, and that was a mistake. I shouldn't have released that because
that's it.
Don't show people things that they want when you can't make it for them. I probably should be bringing it up right now.
You dangled the carrot. You dangled the carrot in front of them, and that's it.
Yeah.
Pandora's box.
I've learned my lesson. I only talk about things now that I'm actually making. So I've gotten better about that. So I don't know that Sam's coming. But ejector will probably come. And injectors to me are legitimately interesting because that would actually round out my offerings. And I think it's just cool. Like, I think the injector is so cool. Like, do you guys remember that the Schick repeater?
I've never like had it in hand, but I know what you're talking about.
It's like a little spy gadget. It's awesome. Like, just playing with it is so cool. I don't really like the shave, but it doesn't matter. Like, it's about playing with it, and it's about the injecting and the way the little head swivels around. It's really cool. So that's what I'm into.
Gotcha. So this is kind of, it's following the same line of questions, but Lather Me Whiskers asks, any plans to make a shavette?
Oh, like an artist club, like a Feather DX type, or something like that. Like a straight edge thing. There's some interest there. Plans would be too strong of a word. I have some vague interest in it. But again, it has to be the case that I can do something that other people aren't doing or can't do or won't do. It has to be something innovative and purpose-driven. It can't just be, hey, I thought about it today, so therefore I made one. that's not enough. Like, it has to serve a purpose in the lineup, has to serve a purpose against the other ones that are already out there. And it has to, you know, be profitable. It has to do all these other things. So, you know, I have like dozens of razors on my computer, just different things, but just because I made them, just because I designed them, doesn't mean they become products. And so a Chevette, you know, very well could be one of those. Like, I don't know that there's a whole lot you can do with that to bring something new to the table. You know, it's a stick with a blade in it. And you can play a little bit with like how you mount that blade, and you can be clever with it. But does that really move the needle in any significant way? I don't know. If there's a way to, I will. Or I'd like to, but I'm not sure that there is.
Gotcha.
We'll see.
I actually got a question, John, I didn't tell you, but for one of our friends in IRC.
Yeah, sure.
SMS. He was actually, it was regarding the Blackbird Titanium. If there is a polished version, is there any noticeable difference in face feel between machined and polished?
Oh man, this is classic. This whole like, yeah, you stumbled into something. So this whole like machined polish thing is a whole thing. And you know, there's been a long standing debate that I think is not a, like shouldn't be one, about whether the machine finish is, has more drag than the polish finish, whether the polish finish glides better, whether there's performance benefit. And this is true for the titanium versus, you know, stainless as well. Like the same thing holds true depending on, doesn't matter the material. My official opinion is that I have shaved with both. I use machine finish most often. I can't tell a difference. If you have a good lather, it's really hard to tell. But I also think that if you think that the polished finish glides better, then you should get the polished finish, because you're not gonna be able to get it out of your head. Like, it will impact your perception of the shave if you think it will. So don't try to convince yourself like, no, no, Shane said it's machined. Like, if you think it, you should just go with that, because you won't be able to get it out of your head. I promise you that. You will find it. And that's true for a lot of things. And what you see in like, what you see in shaving is a lot of this kind of psychology stuff. Like, if one person mentions it on a forum, all of a sudden everyone has that experience. You didn't hear it before, but now people are looking for it. And when you look for things, you find them. And so my, you know, I've done as, excuse me, as like scientific as I can get, where I like, I'll blindly, like I'll put the same handle on each one, so I can't tell by handle feel. And I have done, you know, all sorts of blind shaves with them, trying to find a difference. And like, look, maybe, and technically it should be the case that the polish glides a bit better. Of course. So that technically is true, but functionally speaking, when you've got a lather going, you have all sorts of other variables happening. Like, I can't tell the difference on my own face. And I don't think it should be something that people should be too worried about. Like, it might be a technical difference. Maybe you're gaining like 2% glide or something, reducing your coefficient of friction by like, you know, some small margin. If you were in a lab, maybe you could tell the difference. But I think that for my dumb face, I can't tell. And I don't think there's a functional difference in the real world. But if he thinks there might be, he should wait for the polished version, because it's coming. So that would be my recommendation.
There we go.
That's true of all things. I think people, like, if you have something in your head and you have a doubt, you should just go with that, because that doubt will creep out at some point, and you shouldn't worry about it. You should just go with what you think will be safe for all things in shaving. Well, usually. I think.
Last question, John.
Very similar to that question, is like, DLC coating has drag.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard that too, mm-hmm. right, Shane? Like, does that, or like the jet coating, is, do some people experience drag versus the polish versus the machine?
No, like, probably like the same thing is that if you think there's going to be drag when you purchase an item, then you're going to find it in that. Or if you find that something is going to be smoother, like, it's almost just like a placebo effect. You know, you're setting it yourself up for it. If that seed has been planted in your brain that there's a possibility of this, then your experience is going to try to justify that, you know, and whatnot. So,
yeah.
Lower your expectations.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's not like a conscious thing, obviously.
No, not at all.
Yeah, if you can. I don't think you can even, like, choose to. You know, I think it's really difficult. I think these little, you know, seeds just get planted in our brains. We do that all the time, right? So, for example, you know, on New Year's Eve, my buddy and I, for a long time ago, we were into whiskey, and we kind of dropped off, and, like, I don't drink very often, and so, like, you know, I don't have that, like, that taste that, like, if you guys stopped smelling soap for 3 years, you would be really difficult to come back and be, like, pick up notes. And so we were like, all right, let's get all these whiskeys of different price points, let's lay them out, and let's taste them. And, like, what we found is, like, yeah, the placebo phase plays a big difference. Like, oh, this one costs four times that one. I assume that one's better. You already have these, like, preconceived, you know, conceptions about what it's going to be like. And that really follows through with shaving. So if you read one thing on a forum, you're like, oh, that guy felt drag, like, that sticks there. And just like if you read about, like, a really fancy whiskey, you go like, oh, that's going to be incredible. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but, you won't know until you, like, blindly do it. But yeah, so I don't even know about, are you talking, I imagine, I didn't hear about the DLC thing. It's probably about the Lupo, I imagine, or something,
yeah,
like that.
Precisely.
I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah, there's no reason why that should be the case with DLC.
Okay.
DLC basically reflects the finish of the thing below it. So you really shouldn't experience extra drag. And in fact, people put DLC coatings on things that they don't want to have drag and they don't want to have a lot of friction. So I wouldn't worry about that. I would try to get it out of people's heads, but it's hard. It's sticky. Right. Once things get in, it's really hard to get them out.
Very true. Very true. We do have one more question. And I do know that we've gone past the hour mark, so we don't want to keep you too much longer. And it comes from Reyes Restores. And he asks, do any razors get returned? And if so, what happens to them?
Well, that's such a good question. The answer is yeah. Yeah. Like a single digit percentage gets returned. And what happens to them, they become, well, a couple things happen. They become my personal razor often. So a lot of the razors I use are returns because I don't care. They become occasionally, of course, they're sanitized and stuff. They become like friend razors. If a friend like wants one, like I'll go, here you go. So they become a little bit of like, I should say at the top, what they don't become is sold. They are not sold as new. So if you get a new razor, it's a new razor. Our returns are mine. They become testers for a lot of things. So like the new polisher I'm bringing on, like they're testing on returned razors because that's basically it's like a waste product almost, right? So they get to test on that and there's no risk there for me. So they become testers for new finishes. They become friend razors. And I have several that like are just kind of there. So at some point we'll be selling them. We have a new website coming and that will be kind of at some point part of it. There'll be like a, you know, scratch and dent used whatever seconds thing. Because in addition to return things, there's also like polished razors that just didn't quite turn out or they have a little thing here or there. So, you know, I have plenty of things that like I eventually would like to sell. But yeah, for now we don't sell them. I just kind of keep them around because I don't. Yeah, I'm not even sure if I ever will have a used razor thing. I go back and forth on it. I think we might, or at least we'll test it out. I don't love the idea of just intentionally sending out like flawed product. Even if it's discounted, it's just kind of like, that's still mine. Like even if you paid 20% less or whatever, like it's still a Blackland razor that is out there that is used and you still have like a, I guess use isn't as big a deal, but like, you know, scratch and dent kind of thing. It's like, you know, I don't know. It also, you know, lowers the aftermarket value and other things as well. So just kind of like secondary considerations. And I just don't, also functionally speaking, it's kind of difficult to like have that as part of your store, right? Because there are like a, like the Blackbird, for example, there's something like, 54 versions of the stainless steel Blackbird, like iteration, like you could make like 54 different types. So how do you functionally just like sell that for sale? Like how do you list that? Like if somebody, like if somebody returns like a relatively obscure, uncommon composition of Blackbird, like if you have like a Blackbird with both base plates and both handles and a stand, like it's a pretty specific one, or like an open comb 101 millimeter, like that's both of those things are pretty infrequently ordered. And then to combine them is super infrequent. So how do I list that? Like, do I have a drop down list that just has exactly what we have? Like, so there's also these considerations that I have to think about, and I have to weigh, like, is making 80% back on that product worth the dealing with it, worth the setup, and worth putting out, you know, flawed or imperfect razors out in the world. And at this point, like, the money isn't super vital, or I need to squeeze like every dime out of everything, and I can let them sit there and let them kind of hang, and that's a problem for another day. And if I wind up with like a massive pile of user razors, like I will probably sell them, but for now I'm finding other things to do with them, and it would destroy them in other ways. Like I have so many destroyed Blackbirds in like different types of finishes that are awful, all sorts of weird like PVD finishes. I have some like purple ones and just like weird stuff out there that like won't see the light of day, but I have a bunch of weird things. That's kind of what happens to them.
Well, I was gonna say too, in talking with you, Shane, because both me and Gerard kind of arrived independently that this coming year we just want to really dive in deeper with razors, and like you said, like within our network of friends, even with each other, lend them out before, sinking and buying. Especially, we kind of wanted to check out, what some of the higher end razor makers are, and because it's more of that kind of collector enthusiast thing. Because you'll still, a $20 razor, so you can shave with it and whatnot. But if you're as into these things, as like soap, aftershave, whatever, it makes sense to kind of expand our knowledge base on the razors. So I feel like our crossing paths was really, really good timing.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. There's so many new things coming out all the time. And I would say that, you can have a lot of interesting things. And I think we're going to see a lot of movement in the not quite as like high-end category. I guess that's my hope, and that's my plan, is that like we can still have great quality, but how do we get that in a more cost-effective way? Mm-hmm. Like I think I'm at my ceiling personally. Like I'm glad that there are people out there who buy and make like $500 razors and stuff. I think it's cool. I think the people who make them make an incredible product. But I don't think that that's like the future of wet shaving. I don't think that's like where the growth is. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's where most people are. Like if I were just a regular guy off the street, I'm not going to buy a $400 razor. I'm not going to buy a $300 one either, probably. Maybe I would now because I'm in. But most aren't. And so, my hope is that we can grow into that, more approachable range. Something that is a quality product. Something that's, maybe a quality price point, but not hundreds and hundreds of dollars. So I think that, hopefully you guys can explore some things that are a bit more approachable as well, like in the sub $200 range. I think there's plenty of things down there, and even the sub 100. I think that's where people, really care. Like the guys who nerd out on this stuff, there's levels in the niche, right? Like the niche is already this tiny little thing. And then within that, like we're skimming the surface here. And my goal is at least to get a bigger chunk of that niche. Like that's where we should really be that's what's really interesting to me. And so, we can get crazy and we can start making stuff out of like dinosaur fossils, and we can make all sorts of crazy like razors we want. And that stuff's really interesting for the 12 people who want them. And I think it's great, but my interest is like, how do we bring that kind of flair and that kind of quality and make it so that everyone can kind of access that. So that's what I'm focused on this year. And we can have our cake and eat it too. We can still do the high end stuff. That's not going anywhere. I think that you guys are coming in at a cool time into the hardware side of things, because you're going to see a lot more competitors trying to make products that are more cost effective and more affordable for more people. And I think that's where you guys are going to be seeing a lot of cool stuff coming out in this next year or two. And you're already seeing some stuff from a bunch of makers right now who are trying to get down into a more reasonable market. So you guys are coming into the hardware side at a good time. You're going to have a bunch of high end and kind of moderate end things to look for. It's pretty exciting right now. There's a lot of competition out there and a lot of people trying to get their little corner and trying to carve that out. And that's awesome for you guys. You just get to like document it and be fans of it and pump it out. You guys have no end of material in sight for you guys.
Yeah, not at all. And then sometimes even like in Jonathan, I have talked about this maybe in an episode or just in general, is that it's always easy to kind of look at like where's the like a state of the union, like a state of the hobby, you know, type of like, you know, situation. Like last year was just, I feel it was just almost we had people on that, you know, were able to talk about stuff that we wouldn't have if COVID wasn't happening, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like a lot of you guys, sure, in the business would be just in different situations, you know. Maybe, you know. So
who knows?
Yeah. So yeah, we'll see what we're excited with what 2021's I think gonna bring, and we're up.
Okay. Well, you mentioned state of the, you know, state of the union, state of the hobby. What is it? Give me a quick summary of where you think it's at. Like you guys are actually at a better bird's eye view than I am. Like I'm in it. I make money at it. Like it's I'm in the weeds. It's not, I have no way of like looking at it from a bird's eye view, but you guys can. Where are we at?
So I would say it's still, as far as I'll talk about razors in particular, is that I feel like I'm seeing more razors, I would say even from the, you know, $100 up to $300, $500, whatever. I feel like, yeah, I'm seeing more shave of the day photos with them, more people like, you know, like kind of flexing with them, you know, like stunting on Instagram with them or Facebook or the forums or wherever, you know, shave flexing, right, you know, what they got. And
I like that term,
you know, there you go. You can have it. Trademark. Not trademarked.
Thank you.
Uncopyrighted. Okay. And great. So, and some people, you know, will look at something and say, I've never seen that before. Like, what is that? And it's always the case, you know, like you see something and, yeah, if it just connects with you, if it's something that you're like interested in, now I'm going to look for it. I'm going to, you know, see what I can to buy it. I think it's like that with a lot of other hobbies also in general, just because of how social media is. You just put a product, you put a picture out there, you put a, you know, even from, yeah, a business side, if you just want to put like a little marketing campaign out there, it's really successful. I think in the more eyes on it, the better. It is, I think, uniquely different now. I got into it. I can't even say I got into it. Like you said, you got a 33C. I got the 23C, the long handle, in like 2011. And I was, yeah, not involved in the hobby. And so more people, I think, just making social media a daily part of their lives, they're just going to end up finding something in it anyway. And I mean, if anything, the user base is growing. More eyes are being able to be put on new products all the time. So I think that's where, yeah, it kind of is, and that's where it's still going. I don't think it's plateaued at all. So,
yeah, that's interesting. Do you agree with that, John? That it's not plateaued?
Yeah. I think we still haven't, you kind of mentioned this too, Shane, where appealing to the new edge shavers growing. I we used to say growing the hobby, but I think growing the numbers of people shaving this way using a safety razor or traditional razor, right? Yeah. I think that's still untapped, because I think like a blow was dealt when like Art of Shaving had closed down. Granted, like you might not like their prices or whatever their product, but it was still something that you could go to your local mall and be exposed to it. And I think just having that touch point, right? Because otherwise, who's thinking about this stuff? You're going to get your Mach 5 or your batteries for your new whatever the thing is. But that even that's right. Like Gillette and I think Schick or whoever are playing with that safety razor space in drugstores and pharmacies. So that's something. Right? Last year, Gerard, right? We talked about it's over a year ago. Amazon Gillette had that throwback razor too. So you see people play, the big boys are playing with it, and if they're putting more attention into it, I think that's good for the artisan scene. So it's still, we're still scratching the surface.
Definitely.
Even the price point. Like, I think that there's something to be said about that 100 to 150 range. Instead of growing the absolute top end and like the dinosaur fossil or meteorite material, you're looking for maybe your first stainless steel razor or your first, something more akin to that than the ultra blingy stuff. So it's great. It's still on an upward.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Upward trend, but it's still like we haven't hit the pinnacle yet.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I would probably agree with most of that. And you also have, you mentioned like Gillette and the kind of big guys. We also have kind of, in our world, you have the success of like Leaf and
Supply
who are doing kind of like, certainly, if not exactly wet shaving, definitely wet shaving adjacent. Like they're definitely at least that's like the kind of perfect like branch. Like they're definitely bridging the two worlds, and they're kind of sitting right in between. And I think when you start figuring out like, oh, what is this Leaf thing, and you kind of like, what are these DE blades, and then for most people they probably stop there, and that's cool too. But for a lot of people, I'm sure at least some of them, they're gonna go like, they're gonna read the comments like, oh, these big double-edged blades, like these are double-edged razors, and then they'll go like, oh, this is a whole world I just learned about. So I think that like those guys being successful, I think that's great. I think ultimately, the more people we can have be successful, the more the hobby grows. So seeing these companies do well, seeing Gillette's released, I guess, do well. It's all over the place, so I hope it's doing well for them. With the King C, I think, what they called it, the Heritage.
That was the Amazon release, and then the King C Gillette is the one that was in the
Amazon
Walgreens and drugstores.
Okay. Yeah, you see them in there in drugstores. I think that's great. So hopefully that works out for everyone. I hope that helps our community. But I mean, who knows? We're doing fine. Whatever. I don't care. Well, I'm just curious what you guys think of it. Obviously, it's a healthy little hobby. It's a healthy community. And there's plenty of businesses doing well in it. So I guess we're doing fine. That's all I know. So. And I keep seeing more people interested in it, more people posting. And if soap makers are any indicator, we've got plenty of interest, and there are plenty of people into it. So I think we're in a good spot, and I hope this year goes even better for the hobby and better for the community.
Awesome. Well, Shane, thank you so much. We really appreciate the time that you had to share kind of just behind the company, a little bit about yourself, and even a few of the things coming up. So thank you so much for coming on today's show.
Yeah, thanks again, guys. I really appreciate it. It's a lot of fun, and maybe we'll be on in the future again with some new releases you got coming up.
For sure. We would love to have you back on, especially as the year progresses. Maybe we'll talk about that slant again, just to keep it alive.
That'll be in 5 years.
Okay.
Good. Yeah, that'll
be there.
Put me on the calendar for 2024.
How's that slant?
We'll have a great chat then.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Lather Talk. You can find all the links for Blackland Razors in the show notes. We hope you enjoyed the podcast and hope to catch you next episode. Take care.